Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to This Week in Health Innovation. Hello, everyone. I'm Greg Masters, your producer and co-host of the show. And I'm joined, as always, by my partner in the virtual booth, Dr. Pat Salver. Pat, are you still with us?
I am.
And I'm happy to hear that. We have to always test our systems here because you never know how things work in cyberspace.
Well, in fact, Greg, I'm hearing big-time echo.
You're hearing echo?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Jonathan, are you hearing anything?
I am not hearing echoes.
That may be on your end, Pat. So we are here today, and we're thrilled. We have another great program for you today. We're going to meet Dr. Jonathan Teich, who's the Chief Medical Informatics Officer at the Health Sciences Division of Elsevier. Elsevier is the world's biggest producer of scientific and medical information. And a little bit more about Dr. Teich's background. His area of expertise includes health information infrastructure, e-prescribing and clinical decision support system. His primary focus lies in the design of innovative information systems to directly improve clinical care, prevent adverse events, and streamline clinical workflow to address the most critical needs of the healthcare community. As a practicing physician, Dr. Teich boasts a wealth of experience in the scientific and technical fields. He's an assistant professor of medicine at Harvard and a board-certified attending physician in emergency medicine at the Brigham and Women's Hospital, where he has practiced since 1983. A recognized leader in his field, Dr. Teich serves on a number of industry and government leadership councils. So with that as an incomplete overview of Dr. Teich's background, Pat, over to you. Help us get to know this man.
Great. Thanks, Greg. And Jonathan, we're very excited to have you on the show today. And I think what I would like to start out with is to have you tell us, what is a Chief Medical Information Officer? What is it that you actually do, and how are you helping Elsevier bringing this incredible background that you have to bear on their products and their business?
Well, great, Pat, and good to speak with you and Greg. And I think I'm trying to add my background to Elsevier's incredible background, I think is probably a better way to put it. This is really all about getting information to caregivers and to patients at the time that they need it and where they need it. A chief medical information officer means many different things in many different places. Certainly, it's a position that has been cropping up in many hospitals and health systems to describe usually a physician who's getting closely involved in the implementation and optimization of electronic health records. At a place like Elsevier, where we really spend all of our time on information and getting information to people like clinicians and patients, my role really takes several different directions. But essentially, about a third of my time I'm working on product, looking at new ways of delivering the information that we have. So we're developing products in order sets and in care plans and in patient instructions and patient materials and so on, as well as a lot of reference materials. So I get involved in some of the clinical design of those things. What would it be like for a physician or a nurse or a pharmacist or someone else consuming that kind of information? How do we make it as useful as possible for the people that we want to have buy and use and work with these systems? The other things that I do, I get involved in discussions about how we make partnerships with health centers, with other companies. You know, in some of the bigger hospitals that we work with, kind of function along with other people in at Elsevier as kind of a friendly advisor, trying to help them do the very best they can, not only with our own information but with what they do. And I guess the third part of my job is talking with folks like yourself. I work with organizations like HIMSS and AMIA, which are large healthcare information organizations, trying to work on national policy, work closely with the Health and Human Services Division of the federal government and on both policy and programs. So it basically it wraps up into being the sort of clinician representative, but with some with a fair amount of information background. And the whole point is to apply that to what Elsevier has to offer, which is, you know, we are a company that provides about a quarter of the world's scientific and medical literature and information of all kinds. And more of that is not coming through straight books and journals. More and more of that is coming through interactive, computerized, web-based delivery of information that's just right for one particular workflow or another. So that's kind of the broad picture.
Well, very interesting, and it leads me to a bunch of other questions. I think I'm going to start with this one, though, which is you said Elsevier controls, a quarter of the world's medical literature. And in this day and age, you know, we're all used to being able to access whatever we want for free as often as possible. Where is Elsevier with respect to doing away with paywalls and giving broader access to journal articles as opposed to having to pay, you know, anywhere from, you know, $15 to $30 if you don't happen to subscribe to a particular journal?
Sure, and it's I think it's an important issue with lots of different issues on all sides, and you'll see lots of materials about, you know, sort of which things are best done in which ways. I'm not actually the expert on this material, and you know, the actual publishing area is not that close to the things that I do. We're really more on delivering that information in all kinds of different ways, as I mentioned, and really more on workflow products. I know that Elsevier has a wide variety of offerings that include subscription-based things as well as the kinds of open access kinds of things that you're speaking of, and there's a lot of different ways to provide that kind of information through our journals and others. But really where I spend most of my time, as I mentioned, is really on the electronic tools that bring this to someone who's writing orders or someone who's doing rounds and really takes you out of journals altogether and really into, you know, the kinds of things you're used to seeing on your phone. How do I know when I use an automobile's GPS? You know, that gives me some great information that I need just then. You know, we'd like to do something very similar to that. How do I get just the right information I need? There's millions of pages of literature of all kinds, some of, you know, whether open and otherwise, but really the question is, how do I take the particular paragraph that I need right now out of those millions of pages that I can't possibly keep in my mind? We really spend a lot of our time trying to filter and organize the information so you get just what you want.
Yeah, so that's great, Ken. So I want to drill down on that a little bit. We'll talk about order sets, and then I want to come back and talk about what you're doing that faces the consumer. But in thinking about order sets, I mean, I don't know when you trained, but, you know, we all had our Washington Manual, right? We copied what the kind of orders were that we were supposed to write at the beginning of our career, that it became pretty standard. But a lot of times it was, you know, a little bit too much one-size-fits-all when it came to pre-prepared order sets that came down the pike. Are you guys talking about getting to the point where you could deliver this information to me at the time that I'm writing an, you know, a set of orders for an admitted patient that would really be customized to that patient and take into account the very latest and most applicable evidence-based medicine?
Absolutely, Pat. That's really what it's about. And you know, everybody has order sets. Every hospital in the country uses order sets. And you know, rather than being seen as you know, the cookbook that takes away all of our independence. You know, I, as a practicing physician, see them as this is the place where I can, recall the best practices, especially in cases that I'm not familiar with. And it's a place where it's a nice interface. You know, the nice thing about order sets is that they help physicians because other people who write orders, because they make it fast. You know, it's very fast to scan, review, and use parts or all of an order set. But at the same time, it's a great vehicle for the people who are spending all their time focusing on better quality and better safety to make sure that order set contains orders that reflect the best evidence about new guidelines about treating heart disease, new guidelines about managing particular kinds of testing so that we're not over-testing and so on. So you really want the order sets to do several things. You want them to be very, very much based on the latest evidence. And we spend, a company like us bends over backwards to put in a substantial amount of that while still making it usable. So you want a lot of evidence, but you also want it to be well organized. You want this to be something that doesn't have, 500 orders to choose from. You want it to be something that is reasonably concise and very friendly and usable, but at the same time gives you the key pointers that says, when you're treating this particular thing, there's a quality measure in place that suggests that you do this, and here's the latest information on best antibiotics, and here's the latest information on whether to do a CAT scan or an MRI. It's a great vehicle. It happens all the time because people are writing orders all the time. So it's become a very, very important piece of clinical decision support. And I think you're right that evidence is absolutely at the crux of that.
And have you, talking about evidence, is there evidence that use of these order sets, has it been studied to show whether it actually improves safety and reduces medical errors?
There is. There's some of which I'm happy to say is research that I myself did in the academic part of my career. But there's been a substantial amount of evidence about how clinical decision support of various kinds, order sets specifically, and CDS in general, are making a big difference in preventing errors, preventing adverse events, promoting the use of optimal care practices. You know, we did a study at my hospital that suggested that the use of order sets with appropriate guidance like this can reduce errors by as much as 80% and actually reduce the amount of adverse events that happened in our hospital by 55%. And that was a well-publicized thing a while back. But I think, and you've seen that repeated over and over again, that order sets and other forms of decision support, when well applied, and that's an important consideration, have a substantial positive effect on safety and quality.
And how about the outpatient setting? Do you have, are you producing tools that can help physicians create, first of all, create a care plan? I don't know if physicians have always created care plans, but create more robust and appropriate and evidence-based outpatient care plans for their patients?
It's a very important part as well, and yes, we certainly are. We certainly cover that in our order sets. We cover that in some of our other things, like our nursing care plans. We do a great deal with patient education and patient instructions through our division known as Exit Care, and so there's a lot of different places where you can apply these things in ambulatory care as well. When you're seeing a patient in an ambulatory practice, you're not using the same kind of ordering system that you might use in the hospital. You don't have sort of a big order sheet or order entry system of the same kind, but there are equivalents. There are ambulatory ordering systems, and so we supply to that. And as you probably know, there's been a very, very great effort nationwide in terms of promoting ambulatory care guidelines, making sure that people get tests, appropriate tests like colonoscopies in a timely fashion, making sure that patients are treated properly when they have high cholesterol and diabetes and so on. So there's as much room for the kinds of knowledge support that we can provide in ambulatory care as there is in inpatient. And, of course, that's where the whole country is hoping to move, to get more people out of the hospital because they're getting better care outside.
And Jonathan, I couldn't tell from your description if you actually are involved in the patient education portion of the business.
The patient education is I am not directly part of that, but work very closely with them. We're all basically part of the Division of Clinical Solutions, and so we, you know, even whether I'm personally spending most of my time in one area or another, we all are having constant cross conversations. So, you know, our patient instructions and our patient materials are closely tied in with our nursing care plans. And, you know, our reference pieces like Clinical Key, which is a large reference system, very suitable for the hospital, is tied into some of the patient instructions. So you know, we think of information as a continuum. We think of it as affecting you everywhere from when you're at home, point at which you're seeing a practitioner in the clinic, to the point where you're getting results, getting tests, maybe when you're hospitalized and back home again. All of those areas have the need for information. So patient education and patient materials is a really important and a growing area now. And I think that, which is one reason why, in fact, ExitCare has now joined with Elsevier.
So I wanted to try and understand what you all are doing in the area of patient engagement, really the buzzword of the last couple of years, the patient engagement being the blockbuster drug of the century. Everybody talks about it, but in a way it's kind of like the unicorn thing. Everybody talks about it, but has anybody really seen it or done it? So besides patient education, which to me is kind of in a way, healthcare 101, right? I mean, we all know we need to educate people, but we also know that there are people who know the stuff. They know what they should do, and they don't do it. Are you guys working in any way in this area of patient engagement and in particular, adherence?
We are. It's a very important area. It is, and you're right. I think patient education materials are very important. I think that it's really more about patient programs. You know, we spend, as I've been kind of saying over the past few minutes, you know, what we are trying to do is deliver evidence adjusted for the right person, and for the right work. So, you know, just as we're delivering order sets to people for when they're writing orders and care plans for when they're first, you know, approaching the patient in that setting, I think that as a patient, you're really hitting several different points as well. So, for example, let's say you're a diabetic patient. Yes, you can get patient instructions when you leave the hospital, and you can get materials about diet. But what can you do that's more interactive? What can you do that's more in keeping with the way people deal with information nowadays? So, for example, would it be better if you have, sort of a smartphone application or a web application that allows you to keep track of key indicators like your blood sugar, and be able to track those, be able to kind of be a shared point of information where you as the patient get more, know more about what to do, and where your physician or practitioner can also find out how things are going on. So patient engagement now can be a combination of information for patients and a bridge between the patient and the practitioner, in between visits. So we really can keep that relationship going in between the, just a few scattered visits here and there. We're spending a lot of time with that. We're doing a lot with, how do we present smartphone-based and other kinds of based patient programs? How do we develop things that are both training and also kind of this interactivity? It's a growing field. It's a field that is still not fully taken shape, but we are very interested in being in there early.
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting, this whole mobile health movement that's taking place and how a lot of people, organizations, institutions are pinning their hopes on it. But one of the problems is there's so much of this stuff out there, so many of these apps out there, and very few of them have figured out this whole engagement piece and been able to get patients to use whatever it is that they are offering on a sustainable basis. How do you see that playing out within the context of your company? I hope you're not just looking at producing more apps and moving information from the big screen to the little screen.
there's also
stuff about how to get people to really use the stuff and care about it and engage with it over time.
Absolutely, Pat. It's not just about taking something and putting it in a cute graphic laden format. And there are many, many, many apps out there, and there are whole conferences where people present apps, some great and some less great. I think that the advantage of an organization like Elsevier is that, you know, we are trying to have information come across the board, and we are trying to make that information consistent with each other. So it's not just that you have an app, although some apps are very good. It's that, you know, you have something, you the patient have something, and the nurse has something, and the doctor has something, and they actually are consistent with each other, and sometimes they even talk to and interact with each other. I think that that's really the secret. I think it can't just be only an app working in isolation. I think that, especially for patients with chronic diseases, I think what you really want is information and workflow information that can flow across to your visits and your caregivers as well as yourself. So where we come in is saying, you know, what does a patient app or a patient website or something like that, what does that mean in context of the whole care setting? You know, how does that tie in with being able to measure the patient's outcomes? How does that tie in with being able to understand the whole performance in general of the hospital or the healthcare setting? How does that help us? How does a patient's information reporting help us know as a hospital what we should be concentrating on, where we should be improving our overall performance? And then conversely, you know, when I have had a patient in the hospital and I've written various orders, can I flow that back so the patient doesn't have to re-enter everything, so they have an accurate record, they can check on what I'm putting in and really be able to share information? So I think it's the answer to your question is apps are good, but I think that apps in context with lots of other kinds of information is really what's going to make a big difference here.
You know, it's really interesting. I'm all in favor of patient education and a big fan of certain kinds of apps and love what's going on with the digital health revolution. But at the end of the day, you know, most chronic illness comes down to you being able to help me or me being able to help myself to change behaviors that have led to me having the expression of something that I may have been genetically predisposed to but might not have gotten, you know, had I eaten better, for example, type 2 diabetes. So I'm wondering, although you guys are, I mean, Elsevier in general is known as having the information and as you say, finding more and more creative ways to get that information out in front of the consumers or the clinicians who need it. But are you all also thinking about what kind of role you could play in truly helping to change behaviors? Are there things that you could do where you could put the information in front of me at the time that I'm making my good or bad decision?
Well, I think that last sentence you said is really the crux of what everything in clinical solutions is all about. Is you said, you know, putting the information in front of me at the time that I need to do it. That really is the thing. I mean, that is what's going to make a difference. You know, I can be as smart as anything and have all sorts of book knowledge, but if I can't apply what's not only what's needed right now, but what's really particular to this patient right now, then I have an issue. So if you look at our care planning and clinical guidelines enterprise, which we deliver to nurses and all sorts of interdisciplinary caregivers in a couple of hundred hospitals. If you look at something like that, it is about, you know, how you take care of the patient as a professional, but it is also about, from that point, what can you do to put a patient on an education program, a action program? You know, can I not only tell the patient what is the best practice, but can I also put them on various kinds of programs that say, you know, here's something to help keep you going through the day. Here's something to help remind you through the day. You know, I think that as patients, we're like everybody else. We want to do the right thing. We just have to kind of remember it at the right times. So I think that really being able to do that, if I can do that as part of what the professional tells you and then as part of what you have yourself, I think we want to hit you from several sides. You know, we've written.
Yeah.
I've co-written a book on called Improving Outcomes with Clinical Decision Support with a few other folks. And really, you know, a lot of the crux of that is sometimes that decision support and better care is very much a team sport. You want several different people all applying their best effort to a particular problem, including the patient and including the professionals at different times. So it's really about you know, doing more than one thing. And I think that looping those things together really helps the patient to, you know, be able to feel better and feel more reinforced about making decisions.
No, I agree. And I think when I look kind of into the future of where I think my individual decision support needs to be, it's when you know, I walk by the In-N-Out Burger and I smell those French fries. My phone can say, "Smells really good, Pat, but it's 1,300 calories. Why don't you go somewhere else?" You know, real time. Now, it isn't that I don't know it's 1,300 calories. It's that I need some decision support to help overcome, these physiologic cues that are driving me to do the wrong thing. And of course, we know that we have a whole many industries out there, the fast food industry, I don't mean just to point my finger at them, the soft drinks industry, the cigarette industry, all sorts of industries that are making a lot of money out of trying to influence me to do things that aren't necessarily good for my health. But that being said, what I wanted to do, we're coming up on the towards the end of the show, Jonathan, and what I want to do is to spend a little bit of time talking about Jonathan and who you are and how you made your journey from being an emergency physician, which I guess you still are. I'm an emergency physician as well, and how you went from a clinical practice into this more administrative work that you're doing for Elsevier.
Sure, and it's yes, I still do practice. In fact, I just this morning got my notice that I passed my board, so I've got another 10 years at least to practice. So that was it was my recertification boards. So I care about that. I've been practicing emergency medicine for quite some time, and still love doing that. And I have a computer science background as well, and have a graduate degree in computer science, and have always been looking to combine these. And from the beginning of my time in clinical medicine, it became clear that there's the right answer, and there's the answer that we can come up with in our poor heads. There's some very smart people in my emergency group, and some of them know more than I do, and I would like to have my poor brain power enhanced by something so that I can be as good as they are when the chips are down, when I really have to apply that to patients. So it's always been important to say, you know, these computer things should be able to let me know at the right time what's going on. They're not going to be as good as I am about, you know, talking sympathetically with patients. They're probably not going to be as good at kind of broad decision making, but they don't forget stuff. And you know, the ability of the computer to really, you know, to keep track of enough things and help me not have to keep track and be able to, you know, at least inform me of certain things that are going on has been the most valuable thing. You know, I've always felt that the computer isn't supposed to be the you know, expert super professor. The computer is supposed to be like the really conscientious medical student who keeps track of everything and kind of tugs on your coat at the right times. So having this dual degree, was in emergency medicine. I actually met John Glasser, who is a well-known CIO, when he first got his job, and he actually injured his finger while working at his new house and came to see me, and we actually started a partnership from an emergency visit that lasted for a dozen years or so. And really, that's kind of how I got into the whole area of medical informatics and combining these two. And did that in academics and did that in a small startup company that I helped found about 10 years ago. And came to Elsevier about 7 years ago with the idea that if we are going to make this kind of knowledge service available, then we have to do it commercially because it has to be something that you know, 6,000 hospitals around the country can have access to and has to have good commercial support and has to come from a company that is able to, you know, be reliably giving great information and that knows how to put together information. So my career has always been one of combining, you know, seeing patients with trying to figure out what it is that we do well and don't do well and seeing what kind of tools we can do to make that a little better.
You know, it's really interesting. Before you got on, Greg and I were talking about why is it that so many emergency physicians end up taking on these kinds of administrative roles. It seems to me, although I've not seen the actual figures on it, but just my impression is that we kind of disproportionately end up in these sort of administrative leadership roles. Do you have any thoughts about that as a kind of a wrap-up comment?
Well, I think there's two things. One is that because of the shift work nature of emergency medicine, I think it's a great specialty for people that are doing other things as well with a certain part of their time. So there's the time aspect. You know, I don't have sort of 24-hour phone responsibility. And also I think that people who go into emergency medicine want to see things get done fast. We're all interested in results and seeing results quickly. So it's a natural fit. You know, so I think it's a great specialty for people doing a lot of different things.
Fantastic. Greg, I'll pass it back over to you to wrap up.
Well, thanks, Pat. There you have it. We've been chatting with board recertified in emergency medicine, Dr. Jonathan Teich, who's also a computer scientist as well as an entrepreneur who is the chief medical informatics officer over at Elsevier. Jonathan, thank you for your time today. This is Greg Masters. We do this weekly on This Week in Health Innovation. And join us next week, and we have another show in store for you. Meanwhile, saying bye now and see you next week.